This is Revolutionizing Recruitment with Kathleen Duffy, the arts of attracting, acquiring, and retaining talent. Here's Kathleen.
Welcome back to my conversation with Nicola Moreau. We've been talking about her 20-year journey at IBM and becoming the Chief Human Resources Officer at one of the biggest companies in the world. Nicola, as people slowly return back to the office, I'm curious, is IBM a hybrid organization, or are you allowing people to work remotely 100% of the time?
The beauty of IBM is that we are very geographically dispersed. So I talked about the fact that we're in 150 countries, but even within a country, we have multiple locations. So we have not been one of these companies that has just had one city or one main hub or campus. Because of the type of work that we do, we are very geographically dispersed. Here in the United States right now, you know, we have over 20 locations, and that doesn't even include our client locations, where we often have employees who are on site, not entering an IBM office, but entering a client office on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. The way this works for us is that most of our roles for most IBMers are going to be co-located. You're going to be within commuting distance to an IBM office or a client site. But we have tremendous flexibility in when you go, what days of the week, and even times that you go into that office. If you think about us even before the pandemic, on any given day, only 60% of IBMers were in an IBM office. So we understood flexibility even before the pandemic kind of has forced us on it. What we're now shifting to, though, is rather than individual flexibility, I need to stay at home today because I have a delivery. We're really doing team contracts so that there's team flexibility. As a team, do I know when we are getting together in the office to go do co-creation or collaborative work? And do I know the days and the times that I can then work from home and be remote? So it's really kind of just taking our flexibility to another level that allows kind of that collaboration and productivity for our employees.
Well, you guys are doing some great stuff. So I'm guessing that you're having a great flow of candidates and that you're not like many organizations that are just really struggling with vacancies for months and months on end because of the creativity that you and your team have taken over there.
Well, Kathleen, as you know, you can never rest on your laurels on this topic. You know, in the last 12 months, we did have over 4 million applicants to our jobs. So yes, we certainly have a great influx of talent, but we need to make sure that our talent acquisition process, our recruitment process, is as user-friendly and as seamless as possible. And as you say, we need to make sure that we're continuing to look in all parts of the labor pool for talent that may have the skills to fit our needs.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to talk to you, I want to talk a little bit about these individuals that you've been able to think a little out of the box for your HR organization. And I love the example of looking at TA folks who have experience in retail. And quite honestly, that's always been my strategy is, you know, yes, they know how to interview, but their ability for customer service, to pivot, and they're probably the hardest working people that come out of that. We've also been looking at a lot of educators that are transitioning out of, you know, unfortunately, education and coming into recruiting, and they're just really crushing it. I'm sure that you have a pretty large pool of candidates in the HR space just who are currently employed, right? So do you ever hire external folks for your HR positions?
Absolutely. And look, you know, we look at internal mobility and moving people around within jobs here. But of course, we also look pretty aggressively externally, too, for skills. So it's really a mix of both that really are what kind of drive success here.
So do you have any go-to questions that for your HR folks that you're bringing on board that are outside of the IBM family that helps you to understand that they're going to fit the culture? Because that's sometimes when you're looking at more senior level roles that they may have the experience and the skills, but then it's that culture fit.
Yeah, I think you're on a really important point here. We do something at IBM called license to hire. In order for somebody to be part of our interview team, you're a hiring manager and you want to interview candidates for a job, you must be certified, just like the driver's license. You must get a license to hire. It's an online course that teaches you the right protocol and process to follow in the talent acquisition process. It also helps you fight unconscious bias and the questions you might ask, how to evaluate resumes and selecting candidates. So think of this as not only our talent acquisition team getting very deep in the right protocols to use when you're recruiting, but it's also helping hiring managers and those on the interview panel. So this license to hire helps ensure that we're asking questions that truly are behavior-based, that are experiential, where individuals can share things they've actually done, outcomes they've driven, versus just kind of checking boxes. But you're hitting on another point. It also teaches you how to ask questions about culture fit in the organization. So you might ask questions about, tell me a time that you failed. And what did you learn? Because we're an organization here that is really focused from a cultural perspective on having a growth mindset, having resiliency, trying new things, learning from them, and then pivoting again. So that's a key part of our culture, and it's a question to ask. But this license to hire has really helped us frame and ensuring that we're asking the right questions to get at the skills for the job, but just as you say, the cultural fit as well.
Interesting. I decided to Google what IBM's culture is. And so according to Wikipedia, it says IBM has an ethical, fun, friendly, and productive work environment set up. Lots of interactions within your team, but also opportunities to work cross teams. So I grew up in IBM territory. And I ran high school cross country regionals at the IBM Country Club in Endicott, New York. And so early in my recruiting career, IBM was always a recruiting target. So we were always trying to recruit out of IBM to other organizations. This was in the Stone Ages. Don't worry, I'm not doing it now. But IBM's culture was really different back then. So, you know, like I can see, you know, the women in the dark suits and the, you know, silk blouses with the silk ties. It was just a much more buttoned up, I'm a little nervous to say kind of stuffy back in that time. I'm wondering, you've been there for a long time. Was that the culture that you came into, or was that kind of transformed prior to you getting in there? Were you part of some of this transformation?
Yeah, so look, I think IBM's culture is consistently transforming, and you don't get to be 100 plus years old by just staying exactly the same. Our founder talked about a company, in order to survive, must be willing to change everything about itself but its values. And so our values have remained very consistent. They're around innovation, they're around client, and they are around trust and responsibility, so the ethical piece that you spoke about. So those things have remained core, but there is a transformation that's happening in our culture. We're trying to have more of an entrepreneurial spirit. So what does that look like in a company that's been around for 100 years, who may have a lot of processes and policies, but how do you get individuals thinking differently, challenging each other respectfully, changing things when necessary? So that's a big piece of our culture that we're now focused on. But I would say when I joined 20 years ago, you didn't hear the word entrepreneur very often. Mm-hmm. The idea of having a growth mindset, of changing and thinking creatively, We talked about kind of failing fast if necessary, experimenting. I also think this concept of being team and outcome focused. So not just following a process or following activities, but how are you working collaboratively as a team to drive specific outcomes? And that's another part of our culture that we're changing. It's one of the things that has allowed us to move to the flexible work system that we spoke about, that rather mm-hmm. focused on daily activities in a job. You're focused on kind of outcomes. So it doesn't matter necessarily the details of how something is happening, as long as a team is delivering the ultimate outcome.
Well, clearly you guys are doing something very, very right, because I know that employees at IBM rate you and the leadership team with an A-plus rating. And so I'm curious, have they always been A-plus students, or were there changes that were made to earn that A-plus?
So there's significant changes that have been made. And a lot of it has been around listening and learning. Like many companies, we've always done an employee climate survey. You know, ours has dated back decades. But about 10 years ago, we became much more transparent in the results of that engagement survey. What was going well? What wasn't going well? Leaders were openly talking and candidly even crowdsourcing potential solutions with the employee base. So that started. It's also given us an ability since that time to do what we call mini pulse surveys. Real time, get a sense and respond. You know, think of it as you open up your web browser at IBM and there's a quick question. It might be topical, you know, about a certain application or process. It might be something that's going on in the external environment. So we can get a real-time read on how employees are thinking about it. But that co-creating with our employees, as well as the transparency, has been something that has shifted recently and has been a journey that we've been on.
Well, really interesting. Well, that sounds like some really good stuff that y'all are doing there. So that kind of leads us to the working mom. And I was just reading an article that the chief economist at LinkedIn, and she shared a snapshot of key trends and findings about women's paths to leadership and the burdens that are all faced by us working moms. And I know that you are a mother of three. Yes. This article talked about how women start to lose their footing on their leadership ladder after the first 10 years. And that really coincides with the time that most of us are starting our families and taking on those additional childcare responsibilities. You mentioned in the top of our conversation, and I know you shared this story with Fast Company about the promotion that you passed up because it didn't align with your family priorities at that time. Tell us a little bit more about that process that you had to go through to make that decision, because I'm sure that was not easy.
Yeah, so like many women throughout points in my career, the professional and the personal didn't always line up. When they do, it's wonderful, right? But when it doesn't line up, you have some tough choices to make. And so, you know, I always give a couple pieces of advice to this, to working women. And then I also have some advice for companies as well. But for working women, you know, make sure you have a support system. It might be a professional support system. It might be a personal support system where you can actually honestly talk through those disconnects. Because when they happen, sometimes you need to be honest with yourself about what you want, honest about the type of company you work in, honest about what it might mean professionally or financially. So always find a penalty-free support system that you can go to really ask yourself the tough questions and not be embarrassed by the answers. The second piece of advice that I always give is be clear with your employer when those disconnects exist. Explain why you're making the decision that you're making. And if you're an employer is worth staying with, is a culture that's going to respect those decisions, then you should be unafraid as you have those conversations. If there's anything else, it's probably not the right place to be. So, you know, I give women those two pieces of advice as, you know, you think about this. But I also have, you know, advice for employers. It is important to not only have women in your organization, but to have them in leadership positions, to have them in technical positions, to have them in managerial positions. It is critical for the success of your organization, not just long-term, but short-term. And so you also have to make sure that you're doing two things, that you're creating a culture where honest conversations about the difficulties and sometimes the rub and disconnects between personal and professional can be had, where women don't have to hide or cover about those difficulties. And the second thing is you need to make sure that you're giving them resources and programs to deal with those difficulties. It might be childcare. It might be time off if necessary. And that's really, really critical that you're doing both of those things to ensure that the organization can thrive.
Yeah, absolutely. I recently had a guest on my podcast, Dr. Allison Gabriel, who's a professor down at the University of Arizona, and her research is around working women, but specifically around working moms and their reentry after childbirth. And a lot of it has to do with helping them to reenter and to onboard and some of the struggles that they deal with postpartum depression. So there's some really interesting conversations that are going on around this and really raising an important light to employers around what is very important.
And Kathleen, I think you raise a really good issue there about women kind of re-entering the workforce. And one of the things we do is we think about it at both short term, to your point, what kind of support and benefits are we offering as women after, you know, what I'll call a typical maternity leave, then come back into the workplace. Mm-hmm. We're also ensuring that while they're out, we're thinking about them for promotions upon re-entry or new job roles. So just because they've taken time away, that they're not out of sight and out of mind. But there's a second thing that we do, because for some women, just the standard maternity leave isn't the right professional answer or personal answer for them. Some women take extended time, years even, to raise their children. And then they, when they get to a certain age, they want to re-enter the workforce. So we do have a program called Tech Reentry, because we found that some of the barriers for technical women, if they've been out of the workforce for multiple years, is that they may not feel confident or may not have kept up with the latest technology. It could be a programming language as an example. And so what our program does is it, you know, seeks out these women who want to come back to the workforce after extended absences. And it helps train them, similar to what you and I spoke about around the apprenticeship program. They're working, they're learning. It's giving very specific roadmaps to them to kind of get up to speed on the new technology and ease that entry back into the workforce.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, you mentioned about the employer and how important it is for them to have women on their leadership team. And that is pivotal to the success of the organization. And I've been involved in an organization called 50-50 Women on Boards for the past 5 years or so. And it's the organization that advocates and educates two organizations on the importance of having women on their corporate boards. Are you involved with some of the recruiting of board members to IBM?
Yeah, so absolutely. And I think that this is a shift that's happening in many companies as well, is that HR departments are getting more involved to, as you say, look at and ensure there's a wide list of candidates that are being considered, diverse from gender or race or even a background perspective. In addition to that, you know, I would also encourage boards to look at candidates maybe in some areas where they haven't typically looked. Many boards look at, you know, CEOs. Well, if that's a pretty narrow group from a diversity perspective, your boards aren't going to get any more diverse. We've had some examples of this on our own boards. While we've certainly looked to corporate America, you know, we also have a university president on our board who is a female leader. And we also have a female member of our board who is a former Navy admiral. So it just gives you an idea of you can open the aperture to different areas. I also encourage leaders that I speak to maybe not look at just the CEO in the boardroom, but as the next layer down, CIO, CTO, CFOs, even CHROs can bring new and different perspective. And some of those roles are also more diverse from a gender perspective.
No, I think it does raise the importance of it's not just about gender and ethnicity, right? It is really about the diversity of thought. And I also had an opportunity to have Johnny Taylor Jr. on, the CEO of SHRM, on my podcast a few months ago. And I asked him that question. Is he getting more calls from boards looking for HR leaders to join their corporate boards? And he said, absolutely. And I think that is another thing that the pandemic has done, is it has really elevated the importance of that CHRO to the CEO and the entire board. Because if you guys weren't doing what you did to help manage all the people issues that were going on for the employees, I don't think many of these companies would have made it through.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think too that boards more and more are really seeing talent as a central, not only differentiator, but candidly enterprise risk. As you think about pandemic, as you think about ensuring that you're getting flexible work or hybrid work, right? As you think about employee value propositions of attracting talent and keeping talent in this labor environment, the HR role is kind of central to all of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I can put in a plug for 50-50 Women on Boards, is your nominating committee is looking to expand their pool of talent. There is an amazing group of volunteers across the globe that are predominantly women and people of color that could be some interesting folks for your pool. So, of course, before I let you go, I hope that you're going to be considering a board seat at some point.
Yeah, you know, I've been in this job 18 months, so Kathleen, I had to get my sea legs under me first in the job, but certainly I would consider that going forward.
Well, I certainly hope so. I think you would definitely bring an awful lot to the party between the variety of experiences that you've had in different business units, your global experience. So let me tell you, if I hear of something, I'll certainly let you know. Nicole, I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I appreciate you telling us more about IBM and the work that you're doing over there. So for folks that are interested in learning a little bit more about some of the programs that you all are doing, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so certainly go into our website. You'll find it at ibm.com, so very simple to remember. But also consider following us on LinkedIn, Instagram, or Twitter. Not only do you learn a little bit more about our technology, how we're helping clients, and other programs that we're offering, but you'll also find entryways into jobs that we are open to recruiting for. So I encourage you to do that as well.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I look forward to staying in touch.
Thanks, Kathleen.
You're welcome. Her name is Nicole Lamoureux, the Chief Human Resources Officer at IBM. And that's it for this episode of Revolutionizing Recruitment. I hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, make sure you take a second to subscribe so you automatically get my new shows when they drop. Also, if you have a minute, I'd love if you left me a review so more people like yourself can discover the show. Until next time, take care.
This has been Revolutionizing Recruitment with Kathleen Duffy. To connect with Kathleen or to learn more about recruitment research, go to duffygroup.com.